A Vatican tribunal weighing a financial fraud case has heard from Pope Francis from a secret recording. Jackie Quinn has details.
The broadcast of Pope Francis's own voice in the courtroom marked a new chapter in a trial that's already seen plenty of twists and turns. The conversation was with an accused cardinal over the Holy See's payments to free a nun held hostage by militants. Author and Vatican analyst Marco Politi calls this trial a mess.
Now we don't know whether the Pope has to come as witness in front of the court, which would be unbelievable.
He says
the power struggles within the church have become reckless. There is no more respect for the high authority of the Pope.
Vatican judges are trying to determine who, if anyone, is criminally responsible for losing tens of millions of euros in Vatican assets. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And I'm Ben Thomas, AP News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican, but the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Long sky, yes. It's a car moving along the highway. California with me. I'm almost 2,000 miles from my home, sweet home. 2,000 miles from the arms that bore me. 2,000 miles from my sweet home, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. A reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends. We are a growing show on a growing network, and we could use your help spreading the word. And so I am so excited for our next guest. He is the Milwaukee historian, John Gerda, because he has been the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. He has published 22 books on the city's history, including Milwaukee, A City of Neighborhoods, Cream City Chronicles, The Making of Milwaukee, his latest book, Brewtown Tales. And I also found out this week, I didn't know that you were a regular on Around the Corner with John McGivern, but we also had John McGivern on this week. And so, both Johns, 1 week. And as of last week, after 29 years, you're hanging up the column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So we thought this would be a good opportunity to get you on the show. Welcome, John Gerda.
Thanks for having me. So you've had John McKibben on, Lois Maurer, who was our producer for Around the Corner. She said, two Johns, no waiting.
How much fun was it to do that show with him?
It was a lot of fun. I was front-loaded. You know, I would do all the research beforehand. And early on, we began to have kind of spontaneous conversations, and there was a lot of sort of dead air, you know, so what happened was I scripted it, you know, so I had to memorize it. And then John, he would have to memorize the cues, you know, kind of the outros. And then he figured out that he had his cell phone. He could put the questions on there and say, oh, and what was the population at that time? so it became a lot easier for both of us, and a lot more seamless. And it was fun. You know, we would do maybe two takes, sometimes three, wherever we were for 9 years. So it was 115 shows, something like that. But then for me, a real pleasure of that job was when I was through taping with John and Lois, I would go biking. You know, so it was all around the state, from Ashland down to the southwest corner to, you know, around the Milwaukee area. So I got to see a lot of the state, and I'm as much a Wisconsin as I am a Milwaukee. And so that was a real pleasure.
Yeah. And that's because I listened to one of your interviews, I think from a couple years ago with WPR, after you had done a Milwaukee Magazine interview. And so your mother's from the Driftless region, right? Near La Crosse. Yep. So you really, as much as you are known for Milwaukee, have gotten to do history all across the state.
No, I'm bi-coastal. You know, my dad's Polish from the south side of Milwaukee, so I'm on Lake Michigan, and my mom was from the Driftless around Coos Valley, Wisconsin, near the Mississippi, so I kind of touch both sides of the state.
Absolutely. So there's so many different ways I want to take this conversation, but so you're hanging up the column for now after 29 mm-hmm. years, but this isn't retirement, right?
Oh, no. I've been getting all kinds of retirement. I got a call this morning from a county supervisor saying we want to do a citation for you to be retiring. And I had to explain to him that I'm not retiring. No, the Journal Sentinel gig, that was 2 days a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you know, as another freelancer, you know, you kind of patch together a living for all these years. So I'll keep writing. You know, we just had a Jones Island documentary that was premiered on Milwaukee PBS. You know, the Brewtown Tales book is out. Working on a series of tours, publishing the tours of Milwaukee, doing a lecture series. We can get it together, kind of about Black history in Milwaukee. So that's a, I've got a lot of things I need doing. So I had to tell the supervisor, thank you very much. I much appreciate the thought, but a little premature.
A little premature. Well, and to say what you just said, as far as you've made a career out of being a historian. And when you went and got your master's from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, because you were an English major for your undergrad, correct?
Right, yep.
And then you went and got your master's in history. And so did you think that you could be a historian and not have to be a professor?
No, not at all. You know, especially with a master's degree, and that's as far as I got. And I didn't want to go any farther. I was working, and I kind of wanted to get back out, kind of in the world and writing. So I was never tempted by academia. But no, it's been 50 years. You know,
yeah.
Back in 72 is when I first kind of went freelance. And to think that I've been able to do this all these years is my mom would be shocked. You know, whenever there'd be somebody retiring from the Journal, which was our paper before they merged back in 95, you know, she would say, I see Gerald Kloss is hanging it up. Maybe you should talk to those people. She could never believe, you know, that this could be a career. And fortunately, I have a patient wife, Sonia, you know, who she tells people, you know, she would ask sometimes what my backup plan was. There was no backup plan. No, there was no other net.
So have you always just kind of trusted the process of knowing that there was going to be another book or another TV show or a collab, or just kind of knowing that by being the kind of expert on Milwaukee's history of where we've been and potentially how that can guide, like, inform where we're going, that you just trusted that there was going to be opportunities to continue to write and talk about that?
Basically followed my nose. Yeah. And there was no inside to come to. So actually, a lot of what made this possible, this career possible, is that I would do commission work for nonprofits and for businesses. You know, so that pays a whole lot better than freelance work, as you know. So I've done histories of Miller Brewing, Northwestern Mutual, twice. So repeat business, 25 years apart. I did two books on Northwestern Mutual, Lattice, We Energies, Harnischfeger, which is, you know, kind of reincarnated as Komatsu. So I would write these book length, you know, histories of these companies, as well as Forest Home Cemetery, Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church, Frank Lloyd Wright. So I got to hang around to Taliesin. So over the years, I've gotten to visit a whole lot of different worlds, and kind of someone described as building little houses by the roadside. You know, so I kind of pass those and say, oh yeah, I worked on that one. So those commission jobs, you know, were essential to me being able to kind of fund, you know, the more community oriented sorts of things. And over time, you know, developed enough, you know, enough body of work and enough contacts so I could raise money for things like the Making of Milwaukee or City of Neighborhoods, or most recently the Jones Island documentary. So yeah, it's been. I've always said that. Not, recently said, you know, that if I were to write a memoir, it would be 50 years of 1099s. I have not had a W-2 since 1972.
Wow, that is incredible. We're talking to Milwaukee historian and writer John Gerda about all things of his career, but also Milwaukee. And so, do you feel like there's still more things for you to learn about Milwaukee?
Oh, sure. Or at least ways to package it.
Okay.
The TV is more interesting to me lately than writing. I just did a show called People of the Port for Milwaukee PBS that just premiered last week. And that was a half-hour look at just a fascinating slice of real estate in Milwaukee. Everything from the largest Indian village in Milwaukee to, for 50 years, a Polish fishing village. So there are those stories to tell. And yes, I'm always learning stuff. Just yesterday, I was looking for something else. I do a back page thing for Milwaukee Magazine. Well, they take a historic photograph and do a 300-word essay. And I was looking for something else and came across this half page story about the Menominee Valley from 1898, you know, which I'd never seen before. And they're talking about, you know, people searching through the piles of refuse for tin to scrap, and the jubilant cry of the factory whistle at quitting time, and the tin pail crowd that kind of streams out of the valley. So yeah, there's always stuff. stuff. You know, we're always making more history, so the mind is inexhaustible.
Well, John, now that you're stepping away from your column, but you're not retiring, like many other reporters in Milwaukee, whenever something came up about the history, it's like, call Gerda. We need to talk to John Gerda.
I still answer my phone.
You do. So reporters can still continue to bother you as time goes on.
Yeah, people are not reluctant.
And I said this before, John, and I mean this sincerely, that Making a Milwaukee is one of my favorite books in the world. I've given it as a Christmas present many times, and the series as well is wonderful.
Yeah, we're now in the fourth edition, you know, so it's update. Yep.
So as far as if you had to pick, what was the golden era of Milwaukee?
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era. Nope. There are no golden days. There are no good old days. You know, I said to my kids when they were growing up, you know, they complain about whether it was adolescence or they're 5 years old. There is something good and something bad about every single age, you know, whether you're 7 months or seven decades. And the same thing's true about a city's history. You know, so you think about, you know, the good old days of the 1890s when life was more carefree and we cared about each other and we walked everywhere. You know, look at the river, how polluted it was. Yeah. Look at the coal smoke that kind of settled this pall over the entire city. So it's always it's human life is yin yang, you know. It's always this mixture of darkness and light, you know. So there is no golden period I would look back to as kind of, this is where, you know, Milwaukee got it and we should all go back there. It's not the way the world works.
But as far as you know, pivotal moments as far like the timeline and maybe even just of the last century, like what do you think the biggest shifts have been in the city politically or kind of like the milestones that we've hit that we should all kind of like keep in mind as we try to continue to improve on the city?
The biggest pivot is 1910, when socialists won the mayor's office and a majority of common council seats. And that ended a period of graft, corruption, and just, you know, downright self-dealing. Milwaukee was just as dirty as Chicago on a bad day. You know, so it was, you know, Milwaukee really was. I have a talk called How the Socialists Saved Milwaukee. Yeah, really did. Now it's become kind of the S word, except for Bernie, kind of American politics. But they were excellent governors. And what animated them, what motivated them was concern for the public good. You know, public enterprise, you know, was the kind of the term they constantly used. So, you know, Dan Holland got his picture in the cover of Time magazine back in 1936, Milwaukee's mayor from 16 to 40. And Time called Milwaukee perhaps the best governed city in the U.S. So these guys knew what they were doing. And there were women too, but it was largely guys back then. So 1910's a pivot. And there are certainly, you know, that heritage, you know, Frank Zeidler stepped down in 1960. So it's quite a while ago now, but for most of 50 years, we had socialist mayors. And I've argued that that's kind of part of Milwaukee's civic subconscious. It's still there. You know, it's threatened. It's fragile, but it's still there. That kind of, that mutuality, mutualism, that kind of concern for the common good, I think is still a part of our DNA. Other pivots, certainly one huge one was that period from 79 to 83 when we lost a quarter of our manufacturing jobs. Mm. And that was, but certainly other cities were harder hit, but that had a huge impact, especially on Milwaukee's minority community. You know, in the 50s, actually until about 1970, black workers had a higher proportion of production jobs than white workers. And that meant union jobs in a union town. So you had people joining the middle class, and then just the ladders kind of pulled out from under them with that deindustrialization. So that's a big shift.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, I actually want to talk about some of the historical women of Milwaukee. Our guest for this half hour is historian John Gerda. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to your local civic media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry at all?
listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Cloudy skies expected this afternoon with highs around 37. North winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies tonight, lows dip down to about 29. Overcast again tomorrow, highs around 37. Overcast Tuesday, with daytime highs approaching 39. 43, chance for scattered showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 36 degrees.
Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest this half hour is historian John Gerda, who is the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. And in the previous segment, before the commercial, we were talking about some of the mayors and men who have shaped Milwaukee. But who were some of the women that are notable historical figures that helped Milwaukee be what it is?
Two heroines of mine are part of the Jewish community, and they are Golda Meir and Lizzie Kander. And Golda, obviously, you know, she was Prime Minister of Israel, so she's a big deal. Got lots of things named after her here. But she grew up here. She came here at the age of 8 and stayed until she was in her 20s. So her formative years were spent here in Milwaukee. And she was very active in both the Zionist and the socialist circles here in Milwaukee. So she was part of, you know, that ferment, you know, back in the first decades of the 20th century. So certainly she was a heroine. And then Lizzie Black Kander was someone of German-Jewish background. And there was kind of a gulf between the Eastern Europeans who came here back in the 1880s, who were kind of the great unwashed, you know, kind of is how they were sometimes stereotyped. And she was affluent, kind of from the German side, the assimilated side, and she ended up opening something called The Settlement, which was like Jane Addams' Hull House in Chicago, you know, come one, come all, and for everything, everything from Yiddish newspapers to a savings bank to a library branch. And that became the Jewish Community Center. And to raise money for her settlement, she did. She taught cooking classes, and she would put the right ingredients, you know, very easy to follow. And the result was a settlement cookbook, which sold, you know, well over a million copies. And I think it's no longer in print, but that was a really big deal. So Lizzie, you know, Lizzie and Golda are really, you know, very, very prominent figures in Milwaukee's history on of the women in Milwaukee. Maida Berger, who was the wife of Victor Berger, who was a socialist stalwart here. You know, she was very active in her own right. And going way back, Josette Juneau, who was Solomon's wife. You know, she was a part Menominee by ancestry. And even though it meant the city was not, the fledgling city was being transformed before her very eyes, she acted as a midwife. She was kind of a hostess, you know, for the early Europeans who came in. So she was a towering figure as well. So there is representation, you know, not as egalitarian as it should be, but, you know, there are certainly some notable women in Milwaukee's past.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, you've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've had some real clunkers from people who you expect are going to be wonderful. Has there ever been one where you were just like, this did not turn out like I hoped that it would?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Aside from the ones who give one-word answers, you know, kind of, yes, I don't know. You know, that's just so you're thinking a half hour on your 5 minutes and you're done. I did a book about Bayview called Bayview, Wisconsin back in 1979. And what I would do is a lot of interviews with politicians and clergy, you know, people who you would expect to know the community well. And I was doing an interview with the pastor, a post-lunch interview with the pastor of Bayview's biggest Catholic church, and there was kind of a lull in the conversation, and he's nodding, and he's nodding, and he fell asleep.
Oh, that was really reinforced your confidence as an interviewer, right?
Yeah, boy, did I feel stimulating.
Oh my gosh!
I think I cleared my throat, or you know, kind of dropped my pen, or something like that. turn off the tape recorder really loud. So he kind of sort of finally came to. I won't provide his name, but you know, people may be able
to figure it out.
yeah, right.
So your newest book, Brewtown Tales: More Stories from Milwaukee and Beyond, is out now. But what are some of the highlights of some of your favorite stories that are included in the new book?
These are largely Journal Sentinel columns, but not only. Included a story I did for Milwaukee Magazine about my years as a barfly on Milwaukee's South Side at Big John's Tap, which is one of my favorite pieces in there. But there are 80 essays, largely bite-sized. They run, you know, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500 words through there. Some of the favorite ones, it's interesting. Some of them, my favorite ones are not so much historical. But one is a trip I took on Highway 12, coming from around the corner. We're shooting around the corner in Eau Claire. And I was going to bike, but it was raining, so I took Highway 12 instead of 94 and just sort of fell in love with this sort of slow road home that you can duplicate, you know, any place else in Wisconsin. That's a favorite one. I've done that at readings. Another was the safer inside was the jargon, the motto, when COVID first hit. So saner inside, certainly, but I did safer inside, and I did a column called Saner Outside, which was kind of a description of following the progress of the spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. And that was a chance to really observe nature closely and to kind of get it down in writing. So those are two favorites. But then there's one called A Socialist Citadel, which kind of describes the backstory of Milwaukee socialism. Certainly essays about segregation in Milwaukee, about Black Lives Matter in Milwaukee, so things that are topical as well. So it doesn't lack for variety.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably, as long with some of the other ones, might be Christmas gifts this year. And I appreciated that if you want to not necessarily make Jeff Bezos richer, but want to keep your purchase in the Wisconsin economy, you can buy it at shop.wisconsinhistory.org/Brewtown Tales, because it was Wisconsin Historical Society Press that published it, right?
Correct.
Absolutely.
And that's a great building to visit, too, the Wisconsin Historical Society.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. Right across from the Union.
Everything that they do, I'm so constantly impressed and happy that we have the Wisconsin Historical Society and John Gerdach, because you're not retiring. So now that you've made your debut on this show, I'm sure there's going to be many, many opportunities where we're like, let's get John on the show. He can explain this to us.
Call Gerdach.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We will link the Jones Island PBS documentary and the new books and your website on our website for today's blog post. But John Gerdach, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, Kristen, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, what would you do if you couldn't take a 2-hour flight and you had to take a train? Would you protest? I'm surprised the French aren't protesting, because that's what's happening there. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. In the hands of God. Put all their trust in the hands of God.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station. The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
Relative to population, I believe Waukesha County is running like twice the mortality rate of Dane County.
Right. Well, and then you and your wife braved Mayville to see the band or the plant.
But man, I'm vaxxed. I'm boosted. I'm feeling pretty good about life.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about good shape, but I'm vaxxed and I'm boosted.
Yeah, did you have a couple glasses of wine up there?
No wine, lots of rum. Rum-tum-tum.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
AP News, I'm Jackie Quinn. The National Retail Federation says buying was strong today on this Black Friday, and retailers are sensitive to consumers who are feeling the pinch from inflation. Kathleen Cullen is a senior director.
We're hearing from consumers that they are looking for sales and promotions. They are shopping at different brands than they would otherwise, and they're also considering discount stores.
At the Macy's flagship store in New York City, shoppers were back without pandemic restrictions. Our Rita Foley reports.
60% off fashion jewelry, 50% off select shoes, says Macy's. CEO Jeff Gannett says there's significantly more traffic on this Black Friday compared to the previous 2 years because shoppers feel more comfortable in crowds.
Police in Lumberton, North Carolina are searching for a gunman who fired a shot inside a Walmart store today. One person was injured. The Virginia Walmart manager, accused of killing six people before killing himself, bought the 9mm handgun Tuesday morning, just hours before the massacre. Authorities also say he left a list of grievances on his cell phone. Our Mike Hempen reports.
Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting. Things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan.
Authorities say it was a former student in Brazil who broke into two schools on the same street in Espírito Santo State, killing two teachers and a student today. Some people are traveling home from holiday gatherings. There is snow reported in eastern New Mexico and heavy rains in parts of Texas. COVID cases are back on the rise, and health officials say holiday gatherings could push those numbers above the daily average of 39,000. In World Cup soccer action, once again, the U.S. ends with a draw against England. This is AP News.
Are you dreading going into work every day? Do you want a career where you can earn more and feel appreciated? If you answered yes, then Sigma Castings, a division of Sigma Engineered Solutions in Marcus Ann and Jackson, is your answer. They are more than a company. They are a family of dedicated experts that span the continents. Here are a few ways they make you feel appreciated. Entry-level pay is $18 an hour with regular performance reviews. After 90 days, you get 80 hours of vacation plus 11 paid holidays. They will give you a $2,000 sign-on, stay-on bonus. They offer a robust benefit package with low premiums and great coverage, and their 401k will blow you away. Now hiring first shift, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. Start your new career today at Sigma Castings in Markazan and Jackson. Find them on Indeed or call 920-260-8560 and wake up happy to go to work.
Incredibly crafted wooden dollhouse, a two-story dollhouse where the bedrooms were on the second floor. We were raised in the first floor flat of a duplex. Three bedrooms, a living room, a dining room, and a kitchen. Six kids and a mom and dad. This dollhouse had bedrooms upstairs. We thought Santa made a mistake, and he meant to deliver this to a girl who lived closer to the lake.
Well, hopefully you recognize that voice because he is our guest for the next hour. But welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. But I am so excited to have this gentleman on the show for the next hour. He is the longtime host of the PBS Wisconsin show Around the Corner with John McGivern. He currently hosts the new show Main Streets. He's a five-time Emmy Award winner, actor, comedian, state treasure, I would say.
There
Welcome
you
to
have
the
it.
Show, John McGivern.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm great.
Congratulations on this.
Thank you.
How exciting is this?
It's so fun. It's
you know what's really exciting about this? You have Jane Mann there.
I know. It was so funny because we were talking yesterday. and prepping for today's show.
Yeah.
And they said, well, do you know John? She goes, oh, yeah. We go way back. And
right.
So I wanted to kind of surprise you, but apparently it wasn't a surprise, and you already knew that she was
part of
the
show. I read about it when this all happened. I'm very excited for you because she's great.
John, I met you when you taught a stand-up class, right? Isn't that how we met?
A storytelling class. I met you before that, too, Jane. I think I met when you were on The Mix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Way back. Yep.
Oh, she's a... Talk about a treasure.
Talk about a legend.
Yeah.
In my own mind, at least.
No, in mine as well, Jane, just so you know.
No, I think most people, the amount of people who come in are like, well, of course I know Jane. Right. Just the imprint you have left on southeastern Wisconsin and that legendary voice.
It's great. This seems like a great team.
It is a great team.
Yeah, congratulations.
We're having so much fun.
Yeah.
It is certainly, as you probably, no surprise to you, as someone who's been doing a show, a live like not a live, but a TV show for a long time. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And you guys handle 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, don't you?
We do.
So when you said just an hour, I thought, well, I could come in for three.
You probably could come in for three. That would be a very lively show. I'm just having you, the three of us for three
hours. That's a lot of time.
It is a lot of time.
Yeah.
It is a lot of time. But we're, you know, it's very fun. I think what I have enjoyed so much about doing this that it's so different from doing the short videos that I was doing, and I'm still trying to do, but doing both is a lot,
right,
is things like this. Mm-hmm. Because it's harder to invite someone onto a 60-second TikTok that you want to have a conversation with versus being able to invite someone like you on to talk for an hour. And because so many people love you, so many people get to have an opportunity to hear a conversation versus just see you perform or tune into your show. And so what's been really fun about having the radio show and having a platform is to be able to invite people on to just have a conversation.
Yeah.
And so I'm so excited to have you here.
So we both work in conversation. That's what we do. So my job on TV is to converse
and to
allow people to tell their stories, because that's really what we are, storytellers. But the fact that you do it live is frightening to
me. Performer?
No, I'm a live performer, but a live performer is different than a live radio. Here we go for 3 hours. You know, when I step on stage to do a live show, I have it pretty well planned as to what's going to happen. You'd open your dial and it's like, now what?
Well,
you know?
To be fair, and to pull back the curtain a little bit, I have an outline every day that I
I'm
work
sure
on.
You do.
So I don't totally just freewheel it. But so one of the things that I think, I joked about this as I promoted today's show. So when I was first planning to come back to Wisconsin, and it was when it was first a documentary, but it was As Goes Wisconsin, I was trying to figure it out. My mom was like, I think you should get a hold of John McGivern. And she told me all about Around the Corner with John McGivern and how much she loves that show and how she watches it every weekend and how she feels like, I feel like you could be like a younger version of him. And I sent you an email. This was early 2020.
Yeah.
You never able to be back.
I didn't.
No.
Didn't I? Okay,
and then
well, there
fast
you go.
Forward to a year later, we had coffee a year ago.
Yes.
Because you'd transitioned from Around the Corner to now what's Main Streets. And what I didn't realize is how similar our journey has been as far as being from Wisconsin, going to LA, and coming back.
Career-wise.
So for people who don't know and just know as far as what you've been able to do since coming back to Wisconsin, what was that journey of going out west and then coming back?
You know, the catalyst for my leaving the Midwest was that in 1993, I wrote a show called Midwest Side Story. And it was my own stories of growing up in Milwaukee and the East Side, believing that all of my stuff is really specific and really, you know, I did not realize that people would say, oh, my Lord, your story is my story. The streets are different. The names are different. But what happened in the heart, what happened in situation-wise is the same thing that happened to me. So I wrote this show, opened it at a theater in Chicago, and the second weekend after I opened, Comedy Central was in the house. And Comedy Central saw me do an hour and a half show of my stories and got a hold of me and said, we are producing
an all-gay special on Comedy Central, which would be the only second gay special ever to be on the air anywhere. And we want you to close the show with a 9-minute story. So Out There Too was shot in New York during coming out month, October of 1994, I believe.
Wow, okay.
And from that, I got calls from all over, really, around what, you know, and I got an agent out of Los Angeles, and they said, you really need to come out here, which I look back and I realized that, you know, it was the early 90s, so it was a different world than it is today, yeah. When everything could really be done. What I moved to Los Angeles, and they sent me out on the road is what they did. You know, I did an all gay comedy special, and they sent me out to do comedy clubs in like Idaho. It's
like, how'd that go?
I can remember they had openers for me who were talking about hunting, and you know, and I was like, and I'm sitting in the back going, oh my God, I gotta get together my best hunting material. I do. What do I love about hunting? I love the outfits. I'll talk about them. No, I'm telling you, I was freaking out. And when they introduced me as the guy from the all-gay comedy special, and I'm standing in the back ready to walk on stage, and you hear people going, did they say gay? Oh, my Lord, is this going to work? You know, but can I tell you, that universal sort of, like, my stories are about my mom, about my brothers and sisters, about growing up Irish Catholic. You know, it's so... When you cut away all the other stuff and you just really talk about a human experience, which is really what I've come to know, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. It made no difference, you know, and Idaho was great. And that tour that I did around after that Comedy Central special. Then after that, HBO hired me to do another all-gay special. There were 7 of us who went out there, and that was an HBO special. So it was funny that I was known for my stand-up, which I'm really not a stand-up. Like, if you've ever seen my, like, I'm just not a stand-up comic. I'm a storyteller who sits on the stool and tells a story that at the end that there's a payoff. But, you know, as a stand-up, it's got to be quick. And
yeah,
so, and
that's, it's like every 15 seconds, there's a joke. Or,
it's not
like
me.
Set up punchline, yeah.
It's not me. But L.A. really proved to me what was most important, and that was getting back to some place that felt like home, because Los Angeles didn't. I lived there for 8-9 years and so worked.
That's a substantial amount of time.
It was, and I really worked hard, and I worked a lot, and you know, I did some commercial stuff that paid a lot of money, and I mean, that kind of stuff was fun. But to get home and really kind of figure out what I wanted to do, and what happened, which was really exciting for me, that I always had a fallback, which was a show called Sheer Madness, which is a show that I first did in 1984 in Chicago. And it was a show that ran in places all over the country and ran for a very long time. So when they opened a new show, they would call me to play this character whose name was Tony Whitcomb, who was a gay hairdresser, over-the-top gay hairdresser who owned the salon where the play took place. And so no matter if I was ever out of work, I could always call them and say, what do you have? So I did the show at the Kennedy Center in D.C., in Chicago, in St. Paul, in San Francisco, in Portland. I did it. I would just say, I've got 2 months. Where can you put me? And they'd slot me in, which was the best. Then they gave me the rights to the show.
Oh, wow.
And I came home with the rights to Sheer Madness in my back pocket. And I collaborated with the Milwaukee Rep and the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. We were the 3 producers, and we put it up in Vogel Hall at the Marcus Center to what we believed would be a 6-week run. It ran for 3.5 months and brought in $1.9 million. And the Marcus Center and the Milwaukee Rep said, is there anything else you're thinking of doing?
Like, what other things can we collaborate on?
Exactly.
This one went really, really well.
And we did. We went on for years and collaborated on projects. And it was the first time the Milwaukee Rep and the Marcus Center came together, because the Milwaukee Rep wasn't going to produce this in their season. And the Marcus Center didn't really produce shows. They presented them. So the Milwaukee Rep produced, Marcus Center presented, and I was the glue with all of it.
So how many years did that run then?
We ran that four times over the course of 10 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We also did The Odd Couple, which a co-production. We also did...
Who was your co-star in that?
Chris Tarian, who was my co-star in Sheer Madness.
Okay.
So... there was a campaign out with that to get the word out. It was John McGivern and that other guy. Chris was that other guy. We did Fully Committed as a co-production, that one-man show about somebody sitting in the basement of a restaurant taking reservations. What else did we? So we collaborated for years.
And so our guest right now is John McGivern, as he just said, who is a actor, comedian, TV host, storyteller, and he's here all hour. But so, because a big thing for me, I would say, and I, you know, mine was 17 years of leaving at 16, wow. L.A., Berkeley, San Francisco, New York, back to L.A., did a lot of different things beyond just performing. But for me, coming back to Wisconsin has been hands down the best decision of my life because, I mean, personally, I'm now married, but also career-wise, just how much has kind of fallen into place. It has provided an atmosphere where I can combine all the different experiences and talent that I've collected. And I would have, if you told me 3 years ago, I would have been like, why would I move back to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Like this pressure or this feeling that you have to be in one of the big cities to do this thing that we call performing or, you know,
right.
But there's so much oxygen here to be able to come and create something interesting and valuable. And so like, was that, it sounds like that was almost immediately like you were finding success in LA, but there was something that really opened up for you being able to come back to Wisconsin.
And when I came back with the rights of that show to that show in my pocket, I wasn't sure if I would stay here. I knew I knew that that would probably be successful, and it was beyond successful. And with people asking what I wanted to do next, and then I got a job with TMJ4 as somebody on Friday mornings. They put me out on the street talking about what's best about living in this community. So live shots on television on Friday mornings, and then they gave me Wednesday mornings as well. So it was Wednesday and Friday. Then they brought me into studio, so I started doing TV stuff regularly. And then PBS got a hold of me and said, we want to shoot your one-man show on stage. And I said, that would be great. And then we had our production meeting. They said, no, we think it'd be best if we shot it on the location where the stories took place. Mm-hmm. So it just so happened that they assigned a producer, Lois Maurer, who has now been my producer. We've worked together for 15 years. Yeah. This woman who is like my, you know.
I've seen how you two are together. Yeah,
she's the best. Yes. She's the best. As my mother, you know, may she rest in peace, my mother. But she, when I first started working with Lois Maurer, my mom said, you need to hitch your wagon to her. Lois was like, what? So, but she was assigned that project called The Early Stories of John McGivern. And because of that, you know, we've worked together forever.
And so when we come back, we'll talk more about how that turned into Around the Corner and then how that's turned into Main Streets. I'm so excited that you're here. John McGivern is our guest until 12:30. Stay with us. We have so many more stories to tell. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Soon you gonna take their place. Wagon on their front door. Wanna see you packing on the double. You ain't going away no more. Laugh and be happy. Don't you ever wear a fright. Get right back on your feet.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page or Squarespace. Or Google My Business or WordPress? But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8
all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs level off around 37 this afternoon under overcast skies. Northerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 29 tonight. Overcast. High of 37 tomorrow. Cloudy skies expected. Temps a bit above average Tuesday and Wednesday with highs from the upper 30s to the low 40s. Chance for scattered rain showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 36 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
The Hogans, they have flocked tree. Why is their tree baby blue? Shh, John, don't ask those questions. But why? I just want... Shh, John. No, that's just a... No, but why is the Hogan's tree blue? And my mom said, because they're from West Dallas.
Stallus. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Reminder that we love hearing from you. If you have a topic, if you have a guest that we should bring on, let us know. But our guest right now, as you just heard, is the one and only six-time Emmy Award winner, John McGivern, who just won your sixth Emmy on Saturday. That's so exciting.
For hosting a magazine show, it was very exciting. I didn't go to the same. It was in Chicago.
Okay.
It's the Midwest Emmys, and I didn't go. But I watched. I watched the live stream, and the announcement was great. I'm very excited and proud.
You should be.
Yeah.
So we were talking before about kind of all the different things that you've done between TV and storytelling, live storytelling, and then it turned into... Around the Corner with John McGivern, which has now turned into Main Street. And so tell me a little bit more about how the original show started and how that translated into now Main Street, which is more Midwest than just Wisconsin, right?
Right. So Milwaukee PBS shot my stage show as I sat on location, turned it into a special that aired in markets outside of Milwaukee as well, called The Early Stories of John McGivern. Then it used to be that you could pitch a committee around a series on Milwaukee PBS, and Lois, who had produced that, we had such a great time doing that project that she said we should find something that we could work together all the time. And we came up with this concept called Around the Corner with John McGivern, and we pitched it to the committee, and they said no, that it's missing something. And what they thought was missing was history. So okay. Lois said, do you want to do the history research? And I was like, not really. Are you interested? She said, not really. I said, wait, I know John Goethe. Let's call John Goethe and see if John Goethe would do this segment on our show.
John Goethe is going to be here Thursday.
Oh, that's so good. How great is that?
That's so great. Like, yeah. He's an amazing person to tap. So anyone who's not familiar with John Goethe, he is the Milwaukee historian.
He is.
He's made an entire career out of the history of Milwaukee, and he just announced that his column for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is ending.
Yeah.
And so, just for a little context there, so he was then helping with the show.
He was, if you watched it, so we did 9 years, 117 episodes, and he was the guy who rode up on the bike and gave us 3 minutes of the history of wherever we were that week. And then for four of the years, I believe he had an hour-long special that we shot with him as well.
Okay.
So there was the John, around the corner with John Goethe, that was an hour-long special that we had. So he was with us for 9 years.
Wow.
When the show was no longer renewed, which was after our ninth season, you know, to say goodbye to John Gerda was really it was hard and sad, because you know it was a weekly, once a week, every through the course of our summer, 13 episodes for 9 seasons we were together, and it's just such a really good, smart, informed, very regular, you know, and he puts things in a language that we all can you know take, and he's great, so I miss him. Once he signed on, the committee approved the show, okay. And they approved 1 season, 13 episodes, and we Lois produced it. We kept it very local. We kept it very Milwaukee centric that first year until PBS Wisconsin, which there's 2 PBS networks in Wisconsin. PBS Wisconsin, which is out of Madison, which covers all of the state except southeast Wisconsin. So Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee is covered by Milwaukee PBS. The rest of the state is PBS Wisconsin. They picked us up the first year and ran it the same time we ran it in Milwaukee. So 7 o'clock Thursday nights, which is local night on PBS, PBS Wisconsin played us. So season 2, we went a little further so that their air was covered as well. And we did that for 9 seasons. And over the course of that 9 seasons, we became the highest rated show Milwaukee PBS had ever produced. And then it became the highest rated PBS show on Thursday nights on any station in the country for years running, which was so great. Then PBS World picked it up. So over the course of the last 4 years of that run, PBS World, which runs all over the country, ran Around the Corner with John McGivern. Yeah.
So this might be a hard question to answer, because it's always uncomfortable to toot your own horn. At least I find it uncomfortable. What do you think the magic of that show was, of why it was so popular, and what about it appealed to so many people that it had such a successful run?
I think it was accessible. I think where we went was accessible. Who we talked to was accessible. If people wanted to take a 45-minute drive to Sheboygan Falls and go to the Firehouse Pizza, or walk down Main Street and go to the Beavis toilet seat company. I mean, it was all of that, where it felt like, oh my, we can go do that. And then they would show up and like talk to the person that I had a chance to talk to, you know. So I think it was accessibility and really kind of feeling, I think the show felt really familiar with everybody. And I think it's the case with the new show as well. And Lois, unlike you, I don't mind tooting my own horn.
Fair enough.
Maybe we're different like that. Lois believes that, and you know, I don't have a fear to chat.
Yeah.
And to ask, and to, you know, I'm curious, and to sit down and chat with somebody, you know, as somebody who does what you do, that people like to talk about themselves.
That's
they
true.
Do. So let me ask you about your business. Let me ask you about your home. Let me ask you about the town that you call home, and you know, you've got a show.
And it's so interesting, because as the interviewer, there are obviously someone else is asking the questions, but knowing how to mold the conversation, how to have a quick one-liner to come back with, how to then look to camera and say something else witty. And so like that is such a skill set that I'm so fascinated. We have to take another break, but I'm so interested to know if that was just something that is innately in you, or if it's something that you felt like you had to learn and get feedback on, because it's like anything, that you make it look so easy for something that is a lot harder to do once you actually try, as I now know.
There you go.
So we're going to take another break. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Strike me as funny. I can't hide it inside and squeak as the squeakless do. I got to let go with a ho. How nice! I was hoping you'd Dana. We all would have such a jolly time. We love to laugh loud and long.
to laugh. So everybody can hear. The more you laugh.
Whoops, don't you two start. Come back down here.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. Son más que una empresa, son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Marquesan y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir al trabajo.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.